After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
You know, the bhaktas of the past, their songs are so deeply personal and intimate in their relationship to God, and kind of stepping into that stream as gracefully as possible.
Yeah. Well, it's just... Hey everyone, it's Raghu back, and I'm back with Jai Uttal. And Jai, welcome.
Thank you once again, Raghu.
I don't think anybody needs any real introductions, either to Jai himself or to Jai and I and where we come from. So, but in case, there's probably people out who don't know that we've known each other for... We won't even say.
Where did we meet? We met in Allahabad, India.
No, in Vrindavan.
We met in Vrindavan?
Yeah. After you saw Ram Dass. So we're talking about how we met around Neem Karoli Baba. So yeah, you were there with Mark and Rhonda. How do I remember?
No, it wasn't Rhonda.
It wasn't Rhonda.
But it was Ganga Dar and Charlie Govind and...
yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Jai, well, you know, even though maybe some people out there have heard the story, but it's a great story. You came to Delhi looking to see another teacher and bumped into Ram Dass. Just give us a little.
Well, I had met Ram Dass back in California. Went to his first, lectures, his first events, I guess you could say. And we even invited him to our kind of homemade yoga ashram in Berkeley. And he came over and we sang kirtan and we had dinner. He was so accessible, you know, it was really beautiful. And then went to India to see this other guru who I was told upon landing in India that he was in jail for mass murder. So...
I mean, that's really,
that's
a TV show.
It is. You know, the actual truth of what happened, that's a whole another story. But at that moment, wow. So we were wandering around and I went to a bookstore and the bookseller told me that Ram Dass was giving classes at the, what's that hotel?
In Delhi.
In Cannaught Circus.
We're having old brain. Go on.
So I went there, and the guy at the hotel said he had
Palace Heights. Got it.
The guy at the hotel said he had just left to go to Vrindavan to see his guru. So I at that point was done with gurus because of that experience and all this other stuff that I had heard and. But, you know, had no agenda. Agenda was cut. So we knew Ram Dass and loved Ram Dass. So we went to Vrindavan. And the Tonga driver, we took the train to Mathura and then got into a Tonga. It's a camel cart thingy. And he took us right to Maharaji's temple. But we didn't want to go to Maharaji's temple because we didn't want anything to do with temples or gurus. So instead, he took us to Jaipuria Bhavan, where... Ram Dass and you and a bunch of Westerners were staying because Maharaji had said, stay away for a week. Yeah. So over the course of that week, it's like I was two parts of me. One part of me didn't want anything to do with seeing a guru, and the other part of me was getting more and more and more attracted to Maharaji, because every evening at sunset, remember, you all and then me, I joined you, we're doing aarti on the roof of the guest house. And so when the week was up, I literally ran to the ashram. And I was the first one there waiting for Maharaji to come out. And it's really hard for me to remember my emotional state, because I know mentally I was not into it. But some other place in me, so like amazing. I was so into it. And anyway, you know, then Maharaji came. People gathered. It was such a beautiful small group, but people gathered. And then Maharaji came out. And
what did he say when he saw you?
He asked, he didn't speak to me that first time. He asked Charlie what he did in America, and Charlie said he was a musician. So Maharaji asked Charlie to sing something, so he sang a little kirtan.
Really?
And then he asked Janaki who her guru was, and she told this man that we had meant to see, and Maharaji said, "You Americans are so easily deceived."
He said
that. And yeah, and
no shit.
Yeah, it's you know, we can spend the whole time just talking about that first darshan. I'll leave it to say that it wasn't like I saw Maharaji and I knew this is my guru, this is my everything. But I felt like there was no place else on earth that I wanted to be. So after he jowed us, I went back to the hotel and, you know, I guess I walked around Vrindavan. It was so amazing in those days. Mm. And I was there the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day. And gradually it really came very strongly in a dream, this realization of, well, I can't say who Maharaji was, a realization of who Maharaji, because we don't know who Maharaji was, but this realization that he had been my savior and my protector lifetimes after lifetimes after lifetimes. It wasn't immediate, but the immediate thing was like this incredible, like nothing really was happening, some conversations, but it was like being at the Ringling Brothers Circus. you know what I mean?
I mean, it's the same, Jai. I had the same experience when I first met him. Which went through my mind was, and being, it wasn't just a intellectual thing. It was, oh shit, I've known you. I know you. I knew you forever before, forever after, you know, that infinity kind of loop. And no different than what happened to you after whatever, a few days or something.
Yeah.
But the you said, well, we could go on talking about this for the whole podcast. You know what, though? It is as directly related to the record that you made. So Jai has a new record. Is it out yet, Jai?
Yes, it came out last week.
Dust and Tears is the name of it. But why I say that... couldn't be more directly related to our experience, Jai and I, all those years ago with Neem Karoli Baba and with the tradition, the legacy of what it really was. This record represents that. I mean, so it'd be fun to tell the story of how, because this record represents music that is essentially nothing but devotional in nature. Not just the music, but the words. And it's wonderful how you and Nubia, Jai's wife, put that together collectively. That's also a great aspect of everything. Yeah. So tell that story, Jai.
Well, yeah, I like what you said. It is, you know, sometimes people ask, well, what happened to you with Maharaji? And in a way, it's impossible to really answer that. But if I try to put it into like a one sentence, it's like he planted the seed of longing in our hearts, and he gave us a way to water that seed. Each person slightly different, but a way to water that seed. And in the tradition of devotion in India, this sense of longing for the beloved, longing for God, and both the beautiful, almost blissful sense of that presence combined simultaneously experienced with the abject, heartbreaking sense of distance, sense of separation, it inhabits all the songs of the great bhaktas of the Indian past. You know, bhaktas mean devotees, the saints. We meaning you, me, and all the people in our kind of mandala circle, had been reading books for years and years of the poems of the bhakti saints. You know, the poems of Mirabai, the poems of Gita Govinda, the poems of the Bells of Bengal, so many, Kabir, Tukaram, Tulsidas. But the reality of it was that these weren't poems. They were all songs, that everything was meant to be sung. And, you know, some like Tulsidas or Jayadev, you know, their song cycles, and some of the songwriters were in like hundreds of individual standalone songs to be sung, to be listened to, and to be enjoyed by the common people, just the villagers, the people around them. So, you know, I've been dabbling with some translations for many years, and I've put a couple of things to music, but never really dove into it, whatever that word is. And until one day, it was about 4 years ago, I think, I was sitting in this room, and I was really kind of lazy. I was lying down with my guitar. Usually, you don't play guitar lying down, but I was. And Nubia was sitting at her desk, this desk, and she was looking through a book called Poems of Vidyapati, who was a Bengali songwriter, not poet, but songwriter, from I think 15th century. And she read out loud a line, such is my fate that the clouds give no rain, such is my fate that my love brings only pain. And I was playing this little figure on my guitar, and I said, wait, say that again. And she said it again, and it just fit immediately into this little figure on the guitar that I was playing. And so we just kind of looked at each other, and this light bulb went off and said, you know, let's dive into this ancient tradition and become part of it. Let's people say pay it forward in a way. Let's bring it forward. Not in the sense that we're going to improve on any of these songs, but let's make them our own and put them in a little bit more of a modern idiom. And I put my music to it. And so that was kind of the birth of this project. And it took us a long time. You know, I actually released two albums in the interim since that first idea and then the release of this album. But they were, I would say, kind of smaller albums, for lack of a better word. And pandemic came, and wow, you know, what a time in the world, in all of our lives this has been. So it evolved slowly till finally we had about, I think, 7 or 8 songs. And we had collaborated on the words on all of them. And I'd actually have to say that Nubia did more of the lyrics than me. But what a beautiful thing for us to work on together.
Yeah.
And then it became time to record them. And then recording, of course, is a whole nother saga. We have some sponsors who helped us with the recording finances. And, you know, these songs were so close to my heart that the recording process was really, really hair splitting. Oh. And, you know, I just really wanted it to be so right and so expressive of the emotions. And also, you know, some insecurity, because the songs are all in English, and really most of my last decades of albums have all been kirtan mantras. Yeah. So here was me expressing these emotions and these sentiments that we feel we inherited from these great beings of the past, and trying to express them. You know, I was very overly self-critical, and very, you know, gave myself a really hard time because I really wanted it to be right. And you know, I feel it is right. I just love it.
Yeah, but even, you know, it's funny. I either heard you say, read, can't remember, that because you wanted to approach this in a very, you didn't think that you were going to have to blow this up into a huge production that would cost a tremendous amount of money, which recording can, and you were going to be more frugal. And so what for everybody who doesn't know, of course, Jai and I did work together in a label in the 90s, long, long time ago. I'm going to bring something up musically from then, too. I have that affected me deeply. So it sounds phenomenal. And Jai works with Ben Liebeck.
Liebeck.
Who is an excellent producer, and I don't know who the engineer was who did the actual recording.
Ben did it, eh? Yeah.
With an assistant or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, really well recorded, really well produced, and I'm saying that from as much as I know after all my years of working in that area. So I don't know where the frugal part came in. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's not a horn. There's a horn section in one song. There's not a horn section. There's not not a string section. There's not a thousand musicians. We really tried to make the production of each song match the sentiment of that song. Mm. So, it was frugal. Comparatively, anyone who knows about recording knows that it is costly.
But frugal must also produce something very spacious in terms of you being able to convey these words, and it was all in support of that. So I think it turned out right in terms of the production. Anyhow,
well, thanks. I do too, and. And also it was important that the production didn't overshadow the songs.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And I felt like, not in any kind of weird way, but there was a real responsibility in terms of stepping, literally. Well, we've all stepped deeply into the kirtan tradition.
Yeah.
But this is certainly, it's part of bhakti tradition, but it's a slightly different than the kirtan tradition. And stepping in to these songs, these deeply personal, you know, the bhaktas of the past, their songs are so deeply personal and intimate in their relationship to God. And kind of stepping into that stream as gracefully as possible.
Yeah. Well, it's just extraordinarily well done, because it could get touchy when you're using these kinds of lyric and so on, matching it to the bhav inside you that's delivering, the spiritual expression that's delivering it. But we're talking about music. It's awful. We need to play something.
I like to talk about music. I talk with my son about music every night.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, that's a little
something
different. Yeah. But no, I mean, it's fun to talk about music, and I love it as well. But we're going to play one of the tracks from the album called Cover Me With Your Feather. And Jai will just talk about it for a little bit after we listen. So here we go.
Cover me with your feathers. Raise me up in your wings. You who set your love upon me. You to whom I sing. I me from the terrors of night. The arrows that fly by day, the wave of fear that captures me.
So tell us a little bit, Jai, about how that particular song came about. I mean, I pick stuff, obviously I'm picking things that I really resonated with. I mean, the whole album, the album as a whole is an unusual thing because it's a real album.
Yeah.
That's highly unusual.
You know, we thought about, oh, should we release singles? But it wasn't appropriate for this.
And you sent me a CD, by the way. I thank you so much for that because, you know, that there it is. So, you know, MP3s, everybody, don't do it. Okay? A CD is, I mean, and I haven't listened to a CD in a while, so I was like, holy Jesus. This is
it's different, right?
And
it's
that's nothing
so
compared
better.
To, and it's not as good as vinyl, for instance, right?
We're having vinyl made.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, it's you know, the wait time is
like a
long.
Year, I heard.
No, we should have them. They said we'd have them by the end of February. So that's like a three-month wait time. Mm. This song is a little bit different because it's a song from the Old Testament, Cover Me With Your Feathers. I had recorded the 23rd Psalm early in the pandemic and singing it, you know, far and wide with different audiences, but it was very, very moving and very, very profound. So I wanted to look a little deeper into the Book of Psalms. And I was just kind of, you know, scrolling through. Well, it's like scrolling through a book and see where your finger stops, except it's Google. So, so I'm not quite sure how that image works. But I stopped at the 91st Psalm and I read it and I found it to be like really powerful. And then I read about it and it was composed by Moses. Which puts it at a very, very ancient date. And in a very short form, the story was that Moses was crossing the desert with the people. And, you know, that was a 40-year trek across the desert. And at one point they were getting very, very, very hungry, thirsty, and they were losing faith in Moses as their leader, and they were losing faith in God. And God gave Moses the message to climb Mount Sinai. He didn't say what you're going to find up there. He didn't give him any further instructions. He said, climb Mount Sinai. So Moses did, and we know that Moses was a shy man. He was an insecure man. That's why he always traveled with his younger brother, Aaron, and Aaron gave the speeches. So anyway, Moses got to the top of the mountain and he saw what was described as this vast cloud. And flying in and out of the cloud were angels. And angels of all sizes and angels of all shapes. And there was terrifying angels of plague, angels of death, angels of pestilence. And there was, you know, beautiful angels of grace, angels of healing, angels of enlightenment. But it was a really, Moses couldn't handle it. He panicked and he got really scared. And he recited this, what became the 91st Psalm, asking God to protect him, be my refuge, protect me from the terrors of night and the arrows that fly by day. Protect me. I can't stand without you. I can't take another step without you. And so the 91st Psalm is actually really long, and I just borrowed some small bits of it. And I later found out that it's sung in times of need, in times of desperation, in times of fear. Mm. And so the sentiment there is a little bit different than the Indian bhakti songs, because it's not romantic in that sense. It's more like
Plaintive,
I'm lost. Take care of me.
Yeah.
And I just love that image. Cover me with your feathers.
Yeah. You know, that's me too. But it's like the plaintive part is very much part of the the yoga of devotion, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially expressed through music and through, you know, these people, these Suradas and Mirabai. So I think it's directly connected.
One of the songs that I really love, I really love them all, but you just said Suradas, the song Love is an Awkward Thing. It ripples the mind with waves. That line was written in the 14th century. And things haven't changed.
That's
human
for
beings
sure.
are human beings.
Yeah, right. Should we listen to that song?
Sure.
Yeah,
and then we should do one of the more up-tempo songs. But let's listen to that one.
Okay, so Love is an Awkward Thing, which is the mystic named Suradas. Yeah, so let's talk about love as an awkward thing. It brings something up, actually. I just happened to be looking through this book of Ram Dass' Words of Wisdom, and love is an awkward thing is pretty well connected. Can I just read this little thing from him? This is the path of love. The path of the heart. And everybody, of course, this is what we're talking about. Jai has expressed this on an album. Like all paths, it is fraught with pitfalls and traps. And most of your emotions are either in the service of your mind or frightening things that overwhelm you and make you afraid, so you protect yourself from them. So you come through life a little bit like a hungry ghost, meaning it's not enough. It's not enough. We are beings that have huge needs for love, but seemingly it's like we have some amoeba that doesn't allow us to digest our food. I love that line. That's really great. So though you get love, it goes through you, and then you need it all over again. This conception is so deep within all of us that we've built an entire reality around it, and you think that's the way it is, that everybody needs love. If you don't get it, you are deprived, and the more of it, the better, and you need it every day from everything. So, fraught. This path is fraught. That's why I think the inclusion of, while we were in India with Maharaji, and then after it, many of us, of course, I don't know. Wouldn't you say 90% of us did Vipassana courses, for instance? I mean, because you were with me in one of them. So that just a little bit of the discriminating wisdom that seems to be very much part of our legacy, I would say. That's the best way to put it. So, Ram Dass was really good at elucidating these particular a roadmap that you could look out for the way in which, you know, we deprive ourselves. Self-deprivation. We
deprive ourselves of what is constantly flowing towards us.
Yeah, available. Yeah. So, how did that song come together, though?
Again, it was Nubia looking through a book. I think it was called Songs of the Bhakti Saints. I think that's what it was. Or Poems of the Bhakti Saints. I'm not sure. It was a compilation. And she was, you know, Nubia was kind of the explorer for all of these songs. She was going through all these books and finding ones that she thought could work for us. Mm. So she found that, and I read it, and the writing of that song was pretty immediate. You know, I picked up the guitar, and it's not it's kind of a not normal chord progression for me. It's a little bit stretched from what I usually play, and technically it was a little hard, but the melody and the chords came so quickly, and then I kind of created the two verses based on what was in the poem, but with my own, you know, slant. And then the production of it was very, very simple. And that song was me playing guitar and my dear friend, who's also my guitar teacher, José Neto, playing nylon string guitar. He's a Brazilian, a master.
Did he play with Krishnadas recently? Do you know?
I don't think
so. Or is it a different guy?
Different guy.
Oh, it is a different guy. Boy, there's some great guitar players in Brazil.
This is really true. The bass line, bottom line, is so much higher than here. But José, he not currently, but he's lived in Fairfax for a very long time. He spends part of the year in Fairfax, part of the year in Brazil, and part of the year touring with Steve Winwood. He was Steve Winwood's guitarist for decades. So anyway, it was just the two guitars and my voice. And you know, I thought, oh, I should add backup voices. I should add this. I should add that. Every time I came up with that, Nubia said, no, keep it really intimate. I have to say that not only on the lyrics, but Nubia was really a co-producer on this whole project in terms of like bouncing ideas and coming up with ideas that I thought at first were like kind of off the wall because she's not coming from a normal musician's headspace, you know, but for this song particularly, she said, no, keep it empty. Keep it just with the two guitars. And the last song on the album, which is just me and the banjo, that was kind of a tribute. That song was not based on any ancient text. It was sort of like, how can we thank the people who came before us? You know, we have so much to thank for, all the men and women from time immemorial who expressed their devotion and their relationship with God in song. We have so much to thank. So again, it was a situation where I was just playing this little waltz on the banjo, old-timey style, Appalachian style. And, you know, I play banjo around the house a lot. And I said, Nubia, you got any words? And she said, no. And then she walked upstairs and she came downstairs with the complete song written. And again, it was like, okay, I should add accordion. I should add this. And she said, no. Keep it really intimate. And it's a beautiful way, I think, to end the album.
Yeah, I love you playing the banjo. So great. And I loved the kirtans that you've done with it too. Really. That mix is really phenomenal, I think. But then you also played, and only on one song, I believe, that's my notes, Don't Fly Away, you played Dotar.
Yeah.
Which is like, everybody, a mini sarod, kind of.
I had to get, it's such a funny thing. With guitar and banjo, you need very short nails on your left hand. For Dotar and sarod, you need very long nails on your left hand. So I actually got fake fingernails in order to play. I glued them on with crazy glue.
Oh, man. And you told me not that long ago you really haven't been playing Dotar much.
I haven't. I practiced for about 2 weeks before we recorded that just to, you know, get the intonation right again.
Yeah.
That song was also different from the rest of the songs. That a very, 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 very dear friend of mine, I won't say his name, but someone who was very important in my life, got early onset Alzheimer's. And, well, it was all coming very quickly. And so I wrote that song. I just after he died, I just wrote that song and just sang it into my phone, you know, with the guitar, Don't Fly Away, because it was just so, I was so sad. I was so, I was, you know, one of the brightest people I've known, bright meaning shiny. And then I forgot about the song. I sent it to his wife just as a voicemail, you know, voice message, and I completely forgot about it. And we were deep in the recording of this album. So this song is a little out of the sphere of the other songs. And I was looking, just occasionally I go through my voice messages and I came across it. And I was just like almost started crying. And then, you know, I kind of reworked it in a different key. And we recorded it. And but then, you know, Nubia was saying to me, we got to do a new version of Let Me Be Sky for this album. And I was like, no, you can't do a new version of Let Me Be Sky, because Let Me Be Sky was on Thunder Love. And in some ways, it was the progenitor. Is that the word? You know,
progenitor, maybe.
Yeah. It was a song from a 15th century Bengali poet. Mm-hmm. So as a foreshadowing of this album, put it that way. And but I didn't want to redo it. Because I thought that the original recording was just so right on. But so we're doing Don't Fly Away. And at the end, well, this was actually interesting, because then Ezra, I was playing it with Ezra. Ezra does all the keyboards on this album.
Yeah, no.
And so he came up with this whole modulated chord progression that was a little bit more jazz oriented that I would never have thought of. But it was perfect. So we kind of rewrote the ending and changed it from Don't Fly Away, which was my personal deep attachment, right? Don't go, don't go, don't go. And changed it to Fly Away, Fly Away. And then added, Let me be sky, let me be sky. I see the heavens when I look in your eyes. So, you know, so anyway, this was a family affair.
I see. Oh, boy.
I love that song.
Yeah. No, that song is very great. I mean, we should play that song.
It's touching, you know?
All right,
even without knowing the story.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you get it completely. You don't have to know anything. Although, you know, people, when you get this record, which is very easy.
Yeah. Let me tell you, it's only available on my website.
The CD.
The CD.
Yeah.
Yeah, streaming
is
everywhere.
Yeah.
But the CD and soon, the CDs are all signed and the vinyl will be signed as well. And they're not going to be in stores. They're not going to be in Amazon or anything like that. Just on jaiutal.com.
Yeah. And that's a great way, by the way, to support artists, in this case, of course, Jai, and get a much, much better sound. It's worth having, you know, one of those just... I've got, it's just an Apple CD DVD player, so I can play things still, you know, most especially music, because it's sick how compressed that MP3 sounds like, but still.
And then going through Bluetooth headphones.
Yeah, right, all of that. Oh, God. But it still comes across, so I'm being a little bit effete by saying that in this digital modern age, you know.
Yeah,
but you know, that's why people are buying vinyl now. You know, it's just it sounds way better, and it's kind of fun too.
I love the artwork in this album. It was done
lovely.
It's an artist friend in New York, and I can't wait to see it on vinyl. You know, to see that Sadhu full size.
yeah, no, it's gonna be great. Oh God. We gotta. We should talk after. We gotta get some and put them in Ram Dass's shop.
Oh, okay.
That would be great.
That'd be great.
Both CDs and vinyl, be wonderful. So I have to switch gears a little bit, not much. I said we were going to play this song. Maybe we'll play it as we go out or something. You know, after we finish talking. But I told you earlier, I was having a little bit of a hard day, just technology screw-ups and, you know, just like, is this what they call, you know, we're in Mercury or whatever that
Mercury
is.
Mercury retrograde is 365 days a year. 24/7. If you're over 70.
So good. Anyhow, I was looking through the catalog, your catalog, that I got in my music, and I came across a track called "Bus Has Come" from the original World Music album. I mean, I think you have albums before that. You have a couple.
No, that was the first.
Really?
Well, I had cassette albums.
Yeah, oh, yeah, right. That's
but it. That was the first CD.
Imagine cassette albums. And it's a CD that we did, and Jai did, actually recorded by my brother-in-law in Montreal, where I'm from, and Jai came, and we finished up other tracks in California and Los Angeles. I still love that record. I mean, it's still so great. So Bus Has Come made me think, because Neem Karoli Baba Maharaji used to say to us at a certain time, okay, Jao, get out. And in English, he would go, bus has come. And it was the bus that would take us back to Nainital. So it just the title of it got me all misty. And then I thought, okay, I'm going to put this on. So I put it on. This is earlier today. And Jai... You probably haven't listened to this thing in forever, right? Okay, so Jai does vocalizations over a very unusual rhythmic track with melody, but the vocalization is the emblem to me of what our experience was when Maharaji said, get out, and we wouldn't go. At first, we wouldn't go, and he wouldn't say anything, and stuff would keep going on, and then he'd say it a little bit more forcefully. It took maybe three times before we got scared and we moved. And the leaving, although it was so sweet because you're imbued with all of this, absolutely the unconditionality that he represented, then there was, but it was, you were, it was gone.
It was leaving, and we never knew if the next day was actually going to come.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what human life is. We never know if the next day is going to come. So we're so filled with love at each day and so filled with the agony of, is it going to be over?
Yeah. You know, or how about this? Okay, the agony of, maybe, the next day you don't know what's going to come. This may not be happening, period. And then so there's the longing to get that back, which is what Ram Dass was talking about. Because mentally, if you get into that, then it's never enough if it's in your head. But there's a certain place in one's heart that is longing for this free, unconditional state that we happen to be so fortunate to be in when we were with this being. And that longing is so present in this song, okay, that you have not listened to.
It's funny, in some ways I feel like, it's like years and years and years and decades and many, many albums. In some ways I feel like I've only made one song. I mean, they're all sort of the same song.
Yeah,
right. No matter how much variety musically there's been and lyrically and, so much variety, but in the essence, it's sort of all the same song.
Mm, yeah.
And it started with Bus Has Come.
It started with Bus Has Come. There's some other, by the way, that record is called Footprints. And I mean, it's got things like, this incredible Indian singer, Lakshmi Shankar. And your friend, that incredible, why is his name escaping me?
Don Cherry.
Don Cherry, who was a famous jazz musician who, he played in the bebop area with the guys, I mean, he had more feel than most musicians that one would ever hear. I mean, he was, yeah. And he played on this Indian track. It was a kirtan, actually, right? Yeah. Raghupati Raghava. So
Don was amazing. You know, when I first met Don Cherry, we immediately connected because we had both studied Indian raga with a master named Z.M. Dagar.
Oh,
I had studied with Bob in Berkeley for many months. This was like an in-between studying with Elie Aperkan, and then I had sort of stopped, and then I started studying with the Prad style, the older style with Dagar. And Don had gone to India some time previously and found Dagar Saab and studied with him for a little while. And we this is like how our conversation started. Adan was, you know, he was a well-known jazz musician, but he was one of the people who kind of cracked the door open on world music and bringing East and West together. He called it multi-culti. That's what he
did. Oh, that was the phrase that he used. Said that. I remember that.
Yeah.
Anyhow, it's the combination is pretty amazing. Can you get that CD in your store?
Not in my store.
No.
I think that it's still available.
Oh, as a stream?
It's still available on Amazon. Well, as a stream for sure, but I think the CDs are available on Amazon.
Really, yeah?
I believe so. And if not, check eBay.
Or you should start making them.
You know.
I know.
That's another story.
Yeah. But
I could.
Yeah. Anyhow, here, let's just listen to, because again, we're talking about a song here. Here's an experience. Bus Has Come. He's got that insistent thing going, and with you counterpoint with this incredible rag.
It was some sample, you know. I had a very cheap 8-second or 8-bit 8-second sampler, and I don't remember what sample what it was, but I had my own sampling for that whole album, and. And I had a little sequencer. I didn't use a computer because I, you know, even now I'm not so adept computer-wise. But I had a little sequencer, and I made this sample, and I made the sequence late at night, you know, crazy. And then figured out, wait a second, this should be a song, and I'll sing over it.
I mean, it's 30-odd years ago.
Yeah. More, right?
Early 90s.
90.
So it's about
30,
10. Yeah, right, 30 something. Yeah, that's it. Anyhow, I love it. And it's a direct fit with this new album. Nothing, not musically in any which way, but emotionally, the bob of longing that's in that vocalization. Yeah.
I'm going to show the CD cover again. Oh, by the way, I even have shirts. I'm like full-on commercial.
Yeah. You're also... Oh, there you are. Hold that up again, would you? Because you froze there for a second. Yeah, I love that sadhu. That's great. That really is
me too.
Great.
The sadhu, you know, I was talking to Giuliano, who did the artwork, and I told him, well, I put the CD on my altar as an offering when I got it. You know, to Maharaji, here's the CD. Do with it what you think. It's yours. It's my offering to you. which I've done for, you know, always I do.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but then the CD was on the altar and I started looking at the cover and this sadhu just completely came to life.
Oh, really?
So then I was talking to Giuliano, the artist, and he said as he was painting the sadhu, it was like, you know, because he wasn't working from a photo or anything. He had a bunch of photos of different sadhus, you know, but he said this being presence kind of sat there and dictated the creation of the artwork. Mm. That's really kind of cosmic. And
that's great.
I feel it when I look at this guy's eyes.
Yeah.
No. Let's try to give him a name. I can't, though.
Well, you know, Ram Dass talked about the room where you enter into imagination and connect in reality.
Yeah.
So you never know. Wow. So I know you got to go, but everything we've been talking about will be linked up in the show notes on BeHereNowNetwork.com/mindrolling. And I don't have to say anything about it. I think that we've given you enough of a glimpse that you'll get this beautiful, beautiful album that is so cohesive too. Even, I mean, there's a song, which song has someone singing in Hebrew?
Cover Me With Your Feathers.
Oh, so it's that song. Yeah. I love that combination. You know, I love that kind of thing, you know.
Me too.
It's all one. I mean, it really is.
Amir Pais is a really, really good friend of mine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What is he? Is he a cantor or something?
No, he's a Bachta gypsy Israeli hippie guy.
Oh, yeah?
He lives now in Australia. He was in a very successful world music band in Israel for many years, but then him and his wife's American, they decided it was just too stressful to live in Israel with, you know, war zone. So they moved to Australia. But we are very, very close friends. And in fact, he's coming to visit at the first week of March, him and his wife, and I'm doing an online concert. And we're going to do that song, and he's going to sing
the
Hebrew part.
Really? When is
this podcast going to be released? Probably after that, right?
I don't know. I don't program it, but when is that concert?
March 3rd.
March 3rd? We got a couple of weeks. Yeah, it's possible it'll go up before then. So again, everybody, we're going to put these dates up. Jai also has a kirtan camp that I know people who've come out of it that are really, you know, appreciative to have taken. It's open to enroll, did you say?
Am I right on this?
It's
just started.
Just start, yeah. Well, you got to send me, this is business we'll take care of after, but send me the dates because we're going to put it up on the site.
Okay,
so
awesome.
Yeah, let's go out with the Don't Fly Away because we talked about it. So we're going to leave you with Don't Fly Away. This is Mind Rolling on Be Here Now Network. Go to BeHereNowNetwork.com and there's a plethora of all of Jai and my friends happen to be there.
Thank you
Jack
so much,
Ragu.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for being here. We'll see you all next week. Bye-bye, Jai. Fly away.
your memories. You'll always find a refuge in my melodies. Don't fly away. Don't fly. The freight train rushing from yesterday. Don't fly away.
Just take my hand.